This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Here's today's somewhat disheartening statistic about the state of corporate leadership in this economy. Of the Fortune 500, that's the 500 biggest companies in America by revenue, of those 500, just 44 of them are run by women. That is an all-time high, which is great, yes, but 44 of 500. That's bad on its face, but it's worse when you remember that companies with diverse leadership outperform companies without. So, what makes the leadership that women offer different? That is the subject of a new book by Julia Boorstin. You might know her from CNBC. The book is called When Women Lead. Julia, welcome to the program.
It's great to be here.
We know, writ large, I mean, you know, the statistics are out there about women getting fractions, like single-digit percentages of venture capital money, of companies making more money when women are on the board or when women run those companies. When you started reporting this book, how did you decide to get beyond that? Because the essence of this book is more, it's way more nuanced than just the numbers.
Oh, it's not just about the numbers. As a business reporter for the past 23 years, I've been able to interview literally thousands of people. And I've always been struck by the women. Yes, the women are in a tiny minority. Women currently represent about 8% of CEOs of the Fortune 500. And as you mentioned, women last year secured 2% of all venture capital dollars. So women were exceptions to the rule, but I also noticed that they were leading and approaching problem solving in different ways.
Play that out a little bit. How do these women approach problem solving that is different than male executives?
So what I have found is that women are more likely to lead with empathy. They're more likely to lead with vulnerability, and they're also more likely to practice gratitude. And there was some really fascinating data I found about how gratitude actually enables you to do more longer-term planning and longer-term thinking. And of course, that's incredibly valuable if you're leading a company. And then instead of top-down leadership, the boss telling you what to do, they're more likely to bring in diverse perspectives from across their teams.
Can we talk about Wall Street for a second? You say at one point in this book, women don't seem good at being CEOs because they don't often serve as CEOs. Therefore, investors and board members don't back them. That sort of becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
100%. There's so much data about pattern matching. And there's this fascinating study I reference in the book of jockeys. And male and female jockeys actually compete against each other. And when the betting public, men and women, saw that women were particularly underrepresented in certain races, they assumed they wouldn't be good at that category. And so there is this natural human bias to look for patterns. Investors are looking for the next Mark Zuckerberg. And when female leaders, when women CEOs don't match that pattern, it doesn't compute in people's brains because this natural bias is so powerful.
All right. So look, let me take you off the data train here for a minute, right? Because you've done a ton of research for this book. It shows, and obviously you've internalized it. But the subjective question is, why is it this way?
You mean, why are women so underrepresented in leadership?
Or flip that on its head, why don't men recognize this and take the hint?
First, I think the pandemic has shed light on the importance of many of the characteristics that women are more likely to lead with. And I am optimistic that this is a moment for change for everyone, male and female, to understand the importance of finding their own leadership strengths. And I think part of the problem is there just haven't been that many stories out there of what different types of leadership success looks like. And I think having those other patterns out there, these other images of what leadership can and should look like, I think that's going to be a key piece in this puzzle in getting people to understand what the future of leadership can look like.
So I don't usually do this, but since you wrote about them in the book, I'm going to ask you about your kids. You've got two boys. They're 10-ish, right? Give or take?
One is 8 and one is 11.
Okay. They're going to grow up in a world that is different than you and I grew up in terms of male-female roles, the way business is done. Do you think by the time they're your age, the changes you are talking about in this book will have come to pass?
I'm optimistic. I do. In the book, I write that when I was 13, my mom told me everything was going to be different. And by the time I grew up, men and women would be equal and I would have just as many chances to be a CEO or a senator or all of these things. And I think she was wrong.
Yeah, because look around, right? I mean,
yeah. But I think my boys will be living in a different world. And I think having my boys hear from me about all these amazing mm-hmm. women who are changing the world, not just making money, but also changing the world, I think is a good thing for them to grow up with.
Julia Boorstin covers media and technology for CNBC. She's also now an author, first time book, When Women Lead is what it's called. Julia, thanks a lot. I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.